So if all things that are considered artha or valuable, knowledge is said to be the most valuable thing. After all, everything else that you may gain, you lose. It's just a matter of time when. So therefore, this knowledge, or in English, you could probably even better translate it as wisdom, is the most valuable thing, most valuable acquisition one can acquire, one can get possession of. After all, I have not met a single individual yet that is not endeavoring to make oneself happy and satisfied. And yet, darn, we just don't know how. So we try one thing and the other and third and fourth. And then we say, to hell with everything, and just get drunk. Forget about it all for half a day. And for the other half a day, all we can remember is the headache. And then again, the same problem's there. So we're sort of like an ostrich, you know, there's a big, huge problem running at you, and you're like, oh my God, and then stick the head in the sand. Then you pull the head out, and the monster's still out there looking at you. So, therefore, the wisdom, the knowledge is invaluable. Really, there's no price tag that you can attach to it. So today, I'd like to present to you a bit of information, a bit of wisdom that's given to us in the most famous Indian spiritual classic, the Bhagavad Gita. So Bhagavad Gita teaches, first of all, our tendency is, in order to comprehend things, we try to reduce them. We try to reduce a complex reality to something very simple so we can grasp it and, you know, have it in our hand, you know, overpower it, have it at our own disposal. And we see this is the attempt of modern means of acquisition of knowledge about the world. And what are these means? Chemistry, biology, physics, and mathematics. The whole point is, let us reduce the whole world, you know, down to simple formulas. You know, more simple the formula, the better. More thus, we can more understand about the world. But yet, it's difficult. I mean, like analogies. Why do we use analogies? We use analogies to simplify, to give you a simple example that will help you understand something that's way more complex. But the complex thing remains complex. And really, it will take you to a sophistication, an intricate, sophisticated, refined understanding to be able to comprehend the intricate object of your comprehension. So, so though the world, we could say, is complex, we try to reduce it to these simple simple formulas, and therefore we miss out, we miss the points, and like, for example, whenever someone's confused and asks you a question, that person's always trying to present it. A problem is a very complicated thing, and you, if you're ever in that situation, somebody's at, I mean, if you're a friend of someone, someone must have at least sometimes, at least once in this lifetime, asked you a question about life, you know. And then the best thing you can do is try to simplify. Just deal away with all the confusion, simplify. Oh, now I see. So our tendency is, when we read texts such as Bhagavad Gita or any other wisdom text, we try to simplify, and as we're simplifying, we're losing a bit of reality, because reality is intricate. I mean, there's so many components. Just like I remember one fellow. I grew up in a Catholic country. It's a small country in Europe. Most of the countries are very small, and almost every country has a predominant religion. So I grew up in a Catholic country, predominantly Catholic country. And then the person, one fellow saw me dressed like this. I was all puzzled. Says, what are you? Are you Catholic or whatever the other option was? And I said, well, I'm neither. And he says, what do you mean neither? And then he repeated the question. Are you Catholic or I can't remember what the other option was. And it just, to his peanut brain could not comprehend this perhaps third option. The fellow obviously lacked a bit of sophistication when it came to the matters of religion. So sometimes we have this attitude when we read Bhagavad Gita or when we judge the world. Is he a good person or a bad person? Well, I mean, you know, this is good about him, this is bad about him. I mean, you know, you know, world is not black and white. People aren't black and white. So life is complex. So the knowledge presented in the Bhagavad Gita is also very intricate. It is very intricate. We need to give up this nowadays very common Western arrogance. That we want to, you know, reduce complex reality to something very simple and just in order to control it. Actually, the Vedas teach that we need to understand means to stand under. In other words, to humble ourselves before the truth. If we are to, whenever we venture out of our position to learn about the world, we have two ways of going about it. One is to start from a position of not knowing and moving towards that which we don't know. Or we can begin with the position of not knowing towards that which we don't know. So obviously, to move from that which you do know towards that which you do not know is superior than moving from that which you do not know towards that which you do not know. And one thing we do know, I hate to deflate or harm or, you know, the Southern Californian self-esteem movement, but our position is really a tiny one. And the fact is, the fact that people don't know how to make themselves happy should really tell us what our position is. This is something very important. And to know this is not to be a loser. As a matter of fact, power is gained by this humble attitude, humility. So, on to today's presentation. Just want to take advantage to deal another kick in the face of the self-esteem movement. Balances. You know, to be balanced, we even say you're unbalanced. No good. It's not good. So balance is wanted. Unbalance means, or imbalance, is an unnatural thing. And that's our problem. When we look at the complex reality, we tend to unbalance things. So first attitude that's kind of prominent in the mind of a materialist is that when a materialist deals with the world, with life problems, the materialist thinks that the burden, the responsibility of dealing with these issues, or with this issue, with an issue, lies on me. And therefore we get all freaked out. Or the materialist gets all freaked out. because it feels the pressure. Feels the pressure of responsibility dealing with this problem. After all, we don't know even the most important, most fundamental thing, covering the most fundamental need, and this is making oneself happy. Let alone solving some other problems. And therefore, You know, one thing is, oh my God, you know, the whole thing rests on my shoulders. It's very stressful. It is very, very stressful. And therefore people, and we can see this in our own lives, when we're faced with problems, and life, I mean, life is paved with problems. I mean, giving a lecture is a problem. Gee, you gotta prepare, you know, you have to time yourself right, you have to make sure you say something beneficial, you know. I mean, there's so many components you need to cover, you know. You have to be confident. I mean, so many things, you know. It's a problem, you know. It's a problem to earn living. I mean, there's so many problems, you know. Life is just paved with problems, from very simple problems to very complicated problems. And to the degree we're successful at solving our problems, to that degree we feel successful. And to the degree we fail to deal with our problems, to that degree we need psychiatristic help and all other different sorts of helps. So when we think, here's a problem, here's me, and the whole burden lies on my shoulders, this is very stressful. And that's one problem with this kind of attitude. The other problem with this kind of attitude towards life problems is that to think that everything just rests on your endeavors is illusory. It's completely illusory. Srila Prabhupada gives one example in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the example of a patient. That patient may die despite the most capable, qualified medical assistance. On the other hand, someone even with a more complicated problem may live even due to a terrible lack of qualified medical assistance. Okay, once, so I was... Well, I have nothing against India. I have a great opinion about India, but some things are really funky down there. We were at this village at the hospital, and a fellow that I brought in, he was so severely, someone beat him up. I mean, he was a lump of flesh with broken bones. I mean, he looked horrible. We brought him to the hospital, and they wanted to give him an injection, and this nurse kept turning him on his left shoulder, the shoulder that was broken, you know. And I told her, it's his broken shoulder, and took her like 5 attempts, you know, at turning him on her left shoulder before she heard me, and then, oh, okay, and then she turned on his right side. And the torture continued, it was just one. But anyways, and the guy survived. Must have been the influence of the holy place of Mathura. I have no other explanation. then the other example is sometimes we do certain things, or we have done certain things, and those the order in which we've done these things produce happiness, produce satisfaction, and we feel great about it. Oh, this is so wonderful, you know. Then next day, you gather up all your friends, or next Saturday, whatever it might be, maybe, and they say, let's do it all over again, you know. Then you carefully repeat the process, you know, and the result is different. And you repeat it again and again and again. You can repeat it a billion times. Not a single time will you get the same result. So to think that everything rests on your endeavors is illusory. It's just bogus. It isn't real. So for two reasons, we should not subscribe to this worldview. One is, first of all, it's painful. If you're such a terrible masochist that you want to live a stressful life, then sure, you can live like that. You can maintain this outlook. And then the other reason that it's illusory, really, from our experience, we can see that it's illusory, it's not real. And then what do people do? People say, sure, let me go to the spiritual side, you know. Then what they do then? Then they swing the pendulum to the other extreme. What's the other extreme? Everything depends on God. Everything is destiny, you know. Give it over all to destiny, you know. Whatever destiny, whatever the divine will has in store for me, let it be. I'll just smile, you know. Well, you won't smile for too long. I can promise that. And whoever teaches you this is a cheater. Because they teach this. All these self-proclaimed gurus and incarnations and self-help gurus and you know, tons of books are written on it. It's just a temporary psychological adjustment. You know, people have problems and then some other fool comes and tells the confused fella, don't worry, just close your eyes, it's all fine, it's all predestined, everything's divine, just be happy, just smile, you know. But that's just like ostrich sticking your head in the sand. As soon as you pull your head out of the sand, provided the monster didn't eat up your backside, you still have to face the monster. The problem will still remain. You know, 5 minute, 10 minute, 1 day psychological adjustment, live still, be in the moment. What moment? Time's ticking. Moment comes after moment. And if you don't deal with problems, they escalate. Don't pay your credit card. You'll see what happens. I mean, how long are you going to smile for? Let me see that transcendentalist. So this is another extreme. And it's another illusory thing. If you adopt this attitude towards life, your material life will be ruined. I guarantee this. Your material life will be ruined. So now, why would, you know, a monk, you know, someone who's reduced dealing with the material world to an absolute bare minimum, would tell you that you should care about your material needs? Because they're real. You have material needs. You do have material needs. I'm not saying you're a material body. I'm not saying your material needs are primary needs, but you do have a body, and you drag it everywhere you go. You can't get rid of it. Wherever you go, you carry your head with you, and your belly, and your legs, and bones, and it's heavy. I mean, and you need to satisfy these things. Not only that you have gross physical needs, but you also have subtle physical needs, you know. I mean, why would you think of someone who's constantly unkind to you? Even if he may present himself and be dressed as a sannyasi or teacher or guru or a spiritual leader or whatnot. That's a disservice. So service also includes, service basically includes taking care of people spiritually, intellectually, emotionally, and physically. That's the four levels of our existence. And to take care of someone is to really take care of all these four. But it do come in certain order of priority. Spiritual number one, intellectual number two, mental number three, and then physical number four. We usually have it upside down. We first put the physical needs on top. That's another imbalance. Maybe some other time about that. And therefore we experience problems again. So sure, I mean, if you want to be materially ruined and hurt yourself materially, intellectually, physically, in many different ways, then you can adopt this attitude. But this is also an unbalanced attitude. This is an unbalanced attitude. And I'll just tell you a quick funny story that came to me last Thursday when I was giving almost identical presentation of a fellow who was a other devotee of God, whatever his religious domination was, who cares. There was a flood and he was stranded in his house, and as the water was flooding his house, everyone was leaving the house but him, and they invited him, come with us, the flood's coming, you'll get yourself in trouble. And he said, oh, that's okay, God will save me, no problem. So they all left. And then the water rose, and then the neighbors sent the boat, and they told him, come on board, we'll save you. He says, no problem, God will save me. So the water rose further, and he ended up sitting on top of the roof, and they sent a chopper, helicopter came, and said, they lowered the rope, come with us, we'll save you. He says, no problem, God will save me. So the fellow drowned. That's the story. No, it doesn't end there. It's a happy story. And then he ends up in God's quarters, and upon having the audience of God, he asked the guy, so why didn't you help me? You know, I was all of my life, I was such a devoted fellow. Why didn't you help me? He said, well, I sent the neighbors, I sent the boat, I sent the chopper, and you failed to... You just didn't accept any help. So, your problem. So I said that to illustrate that, you know, we can't swing the pendulum to the other extreme and say, you know, just take it easy and say everything depends on God. No, the Bhagavad Gita teaches that there are five factors of action. So whenever certain action is performed, the outcome of this action will depend upon these five elements. And the first one is the place. The second one is the performer of action. So you have to perform certain action. The third one are the instruments of action. The fourth one are our endeavors. And then the fifth one is destiny or divine will. You can look at it as you like. So these are the five factors of action. That's why initially I said our problem is when with our unsophisticated brains we try to comprehend reality, we always try to kind of simplify. But there's no one factor or the other. There are five at least. Now just think about this. There's divine will and there's amount of your endeavor. So what does this mean? This means that you should always endeavor as if everything depends on you and just see what destiny has in store for you. And practically, I'll tell you what this looks like. Practically, this looks like this. Let's say a problem of life presents itself to you and you have to deal with it. Like paying a credit card debt, you know, or having a turmoil in a relationship. You're forced to act. Life is just, once I compared life to traffic. You know, when you're in traffic on a highway, you can't just, you know, take a break, you know, pull the parking brake in the middle of a highway and say, wait, folks, brake. No, I mean, they're supposed to be going up to 65, but they go 90 miles an hour. You can't just stop. You know, that's life. It's forcing you to act and interact. So what do you do? Well, you do your best. You don't freak out. You just intelligently assess the problem, assess the situation, decide on a, you know, most intelligent course of action, you know, consult spiritual texts like the Vedas, consult experienced people, wise people, spiritual people, experts, decide on the best course of action and execute it. And execute it to the best of your ability. And then stop right there. And then see whatever happens. Now here's the problem, that at this point, you have to be detached enough. You have to be detached enough to be able to, at this point, sit in your couch and see what the movie called life has for you. You do your best. And can you do more than your best? I mean, you cannot. Such a thing doesn't exist. That's an illusion. That's an oxymoron. In other words, it doesn't exist. You do your best, and what else can you do? You did your best. Now sit down and watch. But we cannot sit down and watch because we're attached. Because we have this, I call it a Western, but it's a materialistic attitude. We're just so helpless, we want to... Cell phone. No karma. Actually, personally don't mind at all, so don't feel bad. I do my best and then I just see. See, it worked. We actually staged this. But we don't have the detachment. We have this arrogant attitude, you know, that we don't like the movie, you know. We roll up our sleeves and let me fix this freaking movie. This scene is so unpalatable. You know, it's not developing the way I want it. You know, so get in there and fix this movie. Make it the way I want it. No, you already did your best. You already did your best. Now sit back and watch. That's all you can do. But the only way you can do this, if you're actually a self-realized person, if you actually think yourself not a matter, but spirit. Because as long as you think yourself from a material product, you're going to continue to live in fear. Because, I mean, look at this frame. It's so fragile. There's so many threats at it every single moment. You know, from discomfort to somebody's offensive behavior to, I mean, you name it. You know, and we struggle to keep this very complex thing together, you know. But if you think yourself spirit, then you can be detached. So even if the movie has a horrible material thing for you, okay, so what? You know. Anyways, it concerns only my body. So to get here, it's not an easy. Don't worry, just turn it off. Yeah. To get here, yeah. To get here, it's not going to take just one listening. It's not going to take just one listening. And therefore, you may hear this and you may think, yeah, this makes a whole lot of sense, you know. Oh, this is such a valuable piece of information. My life from now is going to be much better. Then 2 hours later, you'll forget. That's for sure. Therefore, one needs to practice. There's a bona fide, authentic spiritual practice that if you adopt regularly on a regular daily basis, will actually help you embody this teaching. And I'll end telling you the four stages of development of knowledge. You can call it different ways, but I chose this term. First thing in the matter of acquisition of knowledge is hearing, which means it could be reading or whatever. In other words, you acquire the information. You have heard it. The second thing, the second and third kind of tend to come together. So the second thing is to retain the information. In other words, you remember it. Retention. You retain the information. The third is you understand the information. It's very important if you don't understand. And then the fourth one, this is the most crucial one, is when this knowledge becomes an integral part of your character. In other words, it becomes you. Becomes an integral part of you. Becomes inseparable from you. In other words, that is what you are. And that comes from practice. And this is another modern, unhealthy attitude. You know, when we're sick, we just want to swallow a pill. Well, if you want to swallow a pill, I can tell you you're going to get a whole lot of horrible side effects. And in the long run, you'll just be more and more sickly. When you get a cold, you need to fast. You need to eat certain terrible and drink terrible tasting things. Like those... you know, all different kinds of horrible teas and not eat all kinds of other things that you would ordinarily eat, you know. And if you do like this, it'll take longer to heal, but once you heal, you'll be immune, you know. So similarly, we have similar attitude towards life when it comes to acquiring wisdom or spiritual practice. We think, yeah, just give me a pill, you know, zap me, you know. Give me a mantra, you know. I'll give Guru a donation and that's it, you know. Guru, come, please bless my home or something, you know. Touch me on my head and I'll become self-realized. It'll help, but it's just a drop, you know. You have a whole ocean to fill up. So you have to actually, without spiritual practice, this will never become part of yourself. It will never become integral part of yourself. And you're going to continue to hear and continue to live the chicken syndrome. The chicken syndrome is, I don't know if you ever saw, when you toss grains to chicken, and if you toss them far enough from the chicken, first the chicken will see the grains and it will start running after the grains. But because the grain's too far, it'll take a while to reach over to the grains. The chicken will forget what it was running after. This is not a joke. This is real. You can do the test if you have access to a chicken. It forgets. I mean, first time I saw this, I was terrified. I was really scared because I saw to what degree ignorance can go. And I was thinking, my God, a living entity can grow ignorant to this kind of degree. I was so deeply scared. So anyways, that's the chicken syndrome. So, you know, you're here and you walk out, yeah, and you forget. You know, the problem, life problem presents itself to you, you forget. So therefore, the practice is needed in order to properly comprehend, retain, understand the complex world and Krishna within it. So are there any questions or comments, additions, subtractions, challenges?
So wisdom and knowledge, are they same thing or different?
Say that again?
Wisdom
and knowledge. What do you refer to when you say wisdom, when you say knowledge? We're having a communication issue here.
You said when you have knowledge, you have wisdom. I said
to clear the communication, when I refer to knowledge, I refer to wisdom. Because in English, knowledge doesn't mean really wisdom. Yeah. Okay, two and then three. Yes. If you do a mantra meditation, yes.
And specifically Hare Krishna.
Mm-hmm. You chant Hare Krishna mantra, yes.
What is your moral obligation?
Moral obligation.
Like, let's say you get some benefits out of it. Mm-hmm. You chant for a couple of years, mm-hmm. for a couple of months. You get some benefits. I mean, I still like think that what is the obligation?
Well, number one, okay, I'll say two things. Thing number one, the law of karma, and karma means action, reaction, works on a basic principle you don't get until you have given. Even business, you don't get until you invest. Relationships, you get nothing out of a relationship unless you invest. You have to keep investing in a relationship, isn't it? What kind of a friend is a friend that doesn't give? So that's the law of karma. You have to give in order to get. But when it comes to spiritual matters, you can start off as a merchant. But I tell you, that's not an awfully too sophisticated attitude. To have a merchant kind of attitude towards spiritual life and spiritual practices is okay just to get you started. But sooner you drop that attitude, the better. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that there are three types of religious practices or spiritual practices. One is out of fear, one is out of duty, and the third one is out of love. out of fear is, my God, life is horrible, you know. Save me. Someone, tell me. You know, or, you know, fearing ignorance or fearing hell. Some people sell their religious products by advertising this way. You don't want to go to hell. Trust me. You better sign up, become a member of this camp. Because everyone outside of this camp is certainly going down to where it's really hot. To act out of fear is very unsophisticated. It's almost animalistic. You know, it's very unsophisticated. To act out of gratitude, of duty, that's much better. But ultimately, everyone's spiritual practice, everyone's relationship with Krishna should come to the point of love, where you don't do that because you expect something out of it. You quit to be a merchant. Even acting out of duty, out of respect, also does not involve merchant type of attitude. I want something out of it. No, you just feel dutiful. And that's the beginning, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, that's the beginning of genuine spirituality. When you do this out of gratitude and duty, out of these two. But as you begin here, it'll become love. Genuine, like in a relationship, I mean, when you see that your friend, spouse or whatever, is doing things just because he or she wants something out of you, I mean, I get fried. I mean, I get thoroughly disappointed in that person to the point that I'm questioning the future of their relationship. It's the same thing, you know. We think that Krishna is some sort of an order supplier, you know. I have certain needs, so he's going to supply for my needs. I don't like when people treat me like that. And the last one. Was that good enough? Did I... Okay.
The main thing is what Krishna says, you know, keep doing the duty, you know, and then karma relationship come, you know, you do good karma, you get good returns and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
However, the destiny is written.
Destiny, okay, this is another, I object against it. Destiny is not written. Where's that stated?
That part I don't know, but
whoops.
there are people, they will see the planets and tell you how long you will live and what will you do.
Okay, if you go to proper astrologer, he'll tell you that astrological chart is not a fixed thing and it can change. You can go half an hour later and get a different reading.
No, wait.
We're running out of time, so really have to cover this very important point. Actually, it was in my notes here. That another illusory thing about thinking that everything is predetermined. This philosophical position is called determinism. In other words, when you think that you live in a deterministic universe where everything is predestined and predefined. Now show me one person, one individual in the whole of creation. I'll give my head if you find, because I'm certain such an individual doesn't exist, that can live up to this philosophical understanding that everything is predestined. Why are you even asking questions then? Why are you even saying anything? Why are you speaking? Why are you working? Why are you doing anything? Why are you worrying? Why are you not worrying? Why anything if everything is predetermined? That's like so dumb. The fact is that certain things are predetermined. So there's a balance. Certain things are predetermined. And even those things can be changed. Because certain things are predetermined very powerfully or less powerfully. And I'll give you an example from Ramayana. After all, I want to, for evidence, according in Vedic culture, the ultimate evidence for the reality are the Vedas. After all, we have to agree on one common thing in life, otherwise we'll never get to know anything about anything. So in Vedic culture, that's the Vedas. That's why I'm giving you the example from the Vedas, Ramayana. Indrajit goes out to fight Ram, and he sees all these bad omens, you know. And these omens indicate his defeat. But he says, with my prowess, I shall overcome these. That's one of the five factors of action. It's not only divine will. There's also the amount of your endeavor. So if it's not super-duper firmly predestined, you can actually overcome it with the strength of your endeavors. And that's what he was saying. I will overcome it by the strength of my prowess. But of course, it was so thoroughly predestined, firmly, that he got wiped out. there are many examples like this. So certain things are predetermined, and they're predetermined fastly or loosely, depending on, you know, whatever. So there is also the amount of your endeavors. There's another element to it all. Even you may have certain destiny in store waiting for you. Karmani nirdahati kintuja bhakti bhajan. When you do bhakti bhajan, when you engage in devotional service, when you engage in Krishna consciousness out of love, not with a merchant attitude, but out of love, then karma gets annihilated. In other words, the things that you're predestined to experience, they get cleared. They're predestined. You know, that's karma. You killed, you'll be killed. You harmed, you'll be harmed. You kissed, you'll be kissed. But if you chant Hare Krishna sincerely, you may not get kissed. It's a double meaning. Well, if you're a monk, you wouldn't want to get kissed. Okay, then. Okay, we have to end, you know. I serve you as a temple president. I'm supposed to set a good example, but I went over time. So thank you for your attention. I'd like to request you to please rise, and if you don't mind dropping these mats off in the corner, then we'll proceed with the kirtan.